Well, we have such an honor this morning that we have Mariette Klaassen in our studio this morning. And Mariette is ook Afrikaans. So to our audience, I'm also Afrikaans. If we always say when we turn over into Afrikaans is because our English data runs out. So excuse if some of those words and big words come today in Afrikaans. But what a nice morning to start with, Arthur. Welcome and thank you once again for sitting with me.
Thank you for having us. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, and it's like just to, Mariette, excuse me if I say it, but it was so nice to have a Tani in here this morning and having such conversation with her. But what's so interesting to me is that how modern you think. You know, you think so modern, you're so relevant still today in the field that you are in. And, you know, you look after sports psychology. It's a big focus of yours, and you do it from a young age all the way up to older people, ladies or men, in sport. But it sounds like you also do a lot more than that. You're very passionate about what you do. So this morning we have you to listen to your story. Arthur and myself are certainly not qualified this morning to speak on psychology, but we are here to host the platform. And we are here to hopefully spark some conversation with you, Mariette, and hopefully some parents. People are currently in sport. People that are struggling with is psychology a big part of what I need to do? I think there's still some...
education?
Yeah, education is one of it, but there's still an attachment that... A stigma that psychology is not necessarily necessary. And you don't find that just in sport, but in business as well. Because in business, it's also become hugely important because of the circumstances we deal with on a day-to-day business, both personal and business, to become a little bit more stable. You know, you need to prepare yourself for hardships in business. You need to prepare yourself for bad news in the day. You need to prepare yourself for disappointments in business. And if you don't know how to deal with those moments, it can get very dangerous to deal with those situations. And it's quite of a snowball effect I find myself in. But Mariette, I want to go on this morning, but I find that more people that I know, both women and men in business, are starting to find help, are starting to seek help. And some of the stigmas have certainly been lifted. We see big sports personalities at the moment coming out and saying, men should speak, women should speak, we shouldn't sit in our own minds and try and figure it out ourselves. And it's okay, I think, in summary, to ask for help. And that's why you this morning. So welcome, tell us a little bit about you, and Soma, just dive into it, because every conversation with you is just organic. And whatever comes out, I find very interesting. And I think everybody else would the same.
Well, thank you. But first, let me just say good morning. I want to say good morning or hello to Albert and to Arthur. Thank you for inviting me to be here and to all the listeners.
Thank you, Mariette.
It's good to be here and to I feel honored that you asked me, and specifically about the field, the work that I'm doing. To connect to you with the fact that people are seeking for help, I find it, yes. And even in my office, I see business people coming and say, help me making a better success of my business. Even help me doubling my income.
Yeah.
Also sports people, because people think that psychology, you know, if you say, oh, I'm a performance psychologist or I'm a sports psychologist specializing actually in sport, they think, okay, now you're going to help me to get that medal or to get the first prize or in golf win that millions. And it's not just like that, but it's that people, for me, nowadays, we would like people to have open minds, to have a positiveness regarding getting help. Because the demands of life is actually so much, and the challenges that they face every day, that you need to be mentally tough, mentally strong, and to have confidence in yourself. To trust your own self so that you know, okay, I can make a success of this. And sometimes the success is not the gold medal. It's not the first place. It's just to bring the best out of you.
Yeah. And that's in combination with all the other efforts you put in place, your training.
Yes, of course. To be successful, I think it's like a scale. I always say I have a scale. It's a mental scale, a Marietta scale. So it's like my hand. It's a triangular scale. And we want the scale to be in balance. Now, the first thing is called Bokkie. It's the technical side.
It's the one step of the triangle.
Yes.
So you've got three steps.
Yes.
Three corners.
Yes. The one corner is the technical aspects of your sport, whatever the sport you're doing. And even sometimes I get students to say, help me, I want to pass my exams or whatever. Then it's the academical aspects. But it's this side and then the physical aspects. Many sports people, of course, sport is physical. And if you are a runner, yes, you need to be fit and be strong. But sometimes I find that there are sports where people think, now, why should I be fit? I am fit, like golfers.
Yeah.
20 years ago, fitness wasn't even a thought in golf.
Exactly. You know?
And that's why Tiger Woods maybe dominated from a mental capacity point of view, and that's why he was so strong, because he put fitness with the technical and the mindset all in together. And obviously his mindset was a lot more stronger for a period of time because his fitness was allowing him to.
Exactly, and research has shown us
that
if you are physically fit, your stamina is high and good, you're able to concentrate better. Your focus is there. You have more endurance. You can stick it out. So stamina, muscle strength, and suppleness plays a big role in sport, it helps also the mental side. But then the third aspect is my love in life, the mental aspects, because that involves your thinking, your emotions, your focus, your reaction. If you find yourself in a certain situation, on certain circumstances, how do you react to that? How do you behave? How do you handle it? How do you cope with it? How do you perform? Regardless of the fact that there's difficult situations or whatever the circumstances that you find yourself in. So the mental side, it goes to the self, the person who's doing the sport, or even the businessman, the student, the scholar, any person that just to live life successfully, you need to be mentally equipped. So the mind is with the self. What you think and say to yourself about yourself, that's very important. But then the mind attached to the physical side. Body. Do you feel fit and strong, this body? And as you say, a few 2 decades ago, Tiger Woods, or 3 decades, it was two, I think, started with he have muscles. And I mean, he built a lot of muscles. He even had to become smaller again, and because there was a complete swing change with him. But he felt good about his body. And it doesn't mean that everyone needs to be a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Not all of us are. Your sport doesn't want you to have those big muscles. It's good if you're an MMA fighter or a boxer or that. But if you're a runner, you just need to have that strength, your core, your legs. But the mind is with you. There's a connection. I love and I believe that. And that's why that mind-body connection. And then, of course, the mind is also involved in the technical aspects. Many sports people think, and I find it with golfers too, Arthur, you're a, you you were a golfer and you now play golf still just for, I think, recreation. Mm-hmm. But why do I need to have, why do I need to focus or be positive or set goals when I practice? Of course you have to do. Because, and I think it was Gary Player that
I
said.
I was just going to mention, yeah. if we had to go back, Gary Player or Mr.
Practice
Player
like
was,
you want to play.
Was the great example. And
exactly.
People thought he was crazy. Don't, you know, take that in the wrong way.
Yeah, but he was doing his 1,000 sit-ups a day. Mm. He was building his muscle strength and his stamina. He was successful.
Mm.
And he's still doing it.
At his
I
age.
Wish we could knight him, like yeah, in Africa. Yeah. Like, why?
Listen, you can, for that energy, that level of, for me, the energy is one thing, but his mind is still so strong.
Exactly.
When he speaks and what he's doing, I mean, he had his first event now with Vivian, the Vivian Gary, Gary Player and
Correct.
Vivian event in America, the first one. At his age, he still wanted to tick that as a goal,
yes.
you know, to have the first event in America, which I think it was literally a week or two ago. That he had it. And that's just incredible. And Marietta, what you're saying there is so relatable. And I'm not a big philosophy guy or want to put any sort of... But you talk about training. When you start training... And so, you know, I'm not 22 anymore, so I don't build or train to necessarily have big muscles and look like I'm a bodybuilder. But the mental part of it... So if I can't get to the gym in the morning, I still make sure I do 20 minutes of something.
Mm.
That changes my entire day.
Exactly.
But it doesn't just change it in a philosophical way, or it is a commodity for me. And hear me out. I come in, I'm more positive. My mindset is different. My mind opens up in the gym time in the morning. By the time I get to work, I've seen the bigger picture.
Mm.
I'm now more productive. For those 20 minutes that I put in, more productive to my customers,
yes.
More productive on strategies. I deal with day-to-day management a lot better. Therefore, my business is healthier. And it all comes down to me taking the responsibility to train a little bit in the morning and take that time away from everything else.
Exactly.
It's a discipline.
Yeah, it is. And what does it ask? It's self-discipline. That's the very first thing you need to be successful is that self-discipline. Self-discipline for what? Well, to go and train goal directly. Because I have heard it so often. It's like, if you think of the golfer, okay, I'm going to hit some balls. All right, what are you doing when you hit some balls? What are you working on? What do you want to improve? You see? It's like, okay, I've been standing on the range for many hours. Look at my hands. Look at the blisters. Okay, what have you been improving? What have you been
practicing? Arthur speaks about it all the time.
Practicing with a purpose.
Exactly. Goal-directedness. And people think it's that outcome goal. All right, you know, it's always in performance. It is the outcome goal of I want to be in the top 10. I want to break 80. I want to play under par. I want to win, or I want to end up at least in the top 3 or top 5. Or I want to get my tour card or move up. All right. That's very good. Now, I have two questions always. The first one, can you? A person needs to ask, can I? Can I do it? And then, of course, everyone thinks, yes, I can, if, you see, if the wind is calm today, if there's no rain, if all my putts go in, if I'm lucky. No. It's can I, because look at it and think, how certain am I that I can get it right? Did I practice it? Have I done it before? Am I motivated to do that? But then the very important thing is, how am I going to do it? Because many people go to the gym. Why are you going to the gym? Oh, to improve my fitness. Just to have a little workout. Oh, what's the purpose of that? What do you want to work out? You see? You want to improve your fitness? How? How are you going to do it? Are you going to run? Are you going to swim? Are you going to sit on the spinning bike? Are you going to use the treadmill? See, it's about having being task-focused.
Yeah.
And then that self-discipline to stick. The self-discipline to get up in the morning.
Stick to the process.
And stick to the process. Because you feel good about yourself. I wake up and 2 days, nowadays I go 5:45, I start a spinning class, attending it. Okay, so I need to wake up 5:15. And then it is in winter, it takes a lot of discipline. It's dark and cold then for me in Pretoria, well, all of us in South Africa actually. So it's self-discipline. So yeah, I have a purpose. And I think, yes, I look forward because afterwards I feel so good. Like you say, you feel energized, but you also feel your mind is that 45 minutes I spend on the spinning bike helps me focus my mind. It clears out. It's like my day. I've been thinking of my day. And that is why the mental side links to the physical side. It's the goal-directedness, it's your focus, it is the self-discipline, it is to feel good about yourself. Yes, I feel good, I went to the gym this morning at 5, or hey, I did my 5Ks or 6Ks or 10Ks run this morning, despite the fact that it was cold and dark, yeah. Because I'm getting ready to go to the office after that. So yes, it takes a lot from the mind to achieve the success in the physical part, to achieve the success in your technical part.
So all the mind and the body, it makes so much sense that it has to be aligned.
Yes.
But you just mentioned even yourself that have got the discipline, the tools that you give out and hand out. And it's a little bit like the dentist kids, you know, their teeth normally looks the worst. So, but even yourself, with all the tools, it's still a decision you have to make at 5:15 in the morning when it's rainy, it's cold, the wind is out there.
Of course.
To say, I have to physically go out now, get up from my bed and go and do the spin class at 5:45. And that's what I always say to people when they say, well, you own your own business. How do you not wake up every day with love and joy? And like, that's not the reality of it. No. You know, some mornings you just don't want to wake up. Some mornings you feel vulnerable. And it's the same thing then for an athlete, because no matter how much support he has around him, no matter how much programs we build around the sport athletes, they still have to have the personal discipline to execute those plans. Because you can't sit with him in the morning and wake him up next to him saying,
exactly.
Come.
No matter how good a coach the athlete has, no matter how good support. And I always say, I cannot do it. I'm the psychologist or the mentor or the mental coach. See me what you want to see me for. But I can suggest it. I can teach you this. I give you this. You take responsibility for what you do with it. That is exactly that. A person is, you as a person, you are in control of your own self. It doesn't feel that way always, but we are. As a human being, there's no little thingy to wind you up or batteries, yeah, put in your batteries, or you're not a puppet somewhere, somebody's controlling you. You are in control of yourself. And because of that, you're responsible for yourself. And one always has a choice. You have a choice. You have a choice if... Okay, I thought of it this morning sitting in the traffic because we had load shedding when I left my home. And it was that you have a choice. Am I going to be frustrated? Am I going to become irritated and be angry and ruin actually my whole day? Or am I going to just sit and enjoy it? Go peacefully. Luckily, I had the certainty that the GPS told me I'll be here by 8 o'clock. So relax. Enjoy. Listen to nice music or listen to some radio talk that I normally do not have the time with.
Yeah.
You have a choice. Like the golfer on the course, you have a choice. Are you going to get angry with yourself and curse yourself and ridicule yourself and say, "Ah, you stupid idiot," or are you going to stay cool and calm? And just focus on the next shot and still keep a positive mindset and trust yourself. Trust your own abilities.
Stay in the moment.
Stay in the moment.
Don't go backwards or don't think ahead of yourself.
Exactly, Arthur.
Stay in the moment.
This shot now. Because why walk from where you played to wherever the ball might be for the next shot and then you go back and you think, why did I do that? Oh, boy. If that didn't happen, I could have been. Because you go back and you go forth, and that's past. The past is past, and the future is still to come. All you are actually in control of is now, this moment.
So as parents, we want the best for our kids.
Yes.
But it's becoming scarier and scarier. I always say to my wife that we raise our kid with all the best of intention. We put her in environments that we think is conducive to her being raised well. We try and install the right values in her. But life still sucks our kids in and then sometimes spits them out. At a older age, they become rebellious. You know, drugs gets involved. Mm. We see it all the time in professional sport. It's taken also some very talented people in the industry. And it's like, okay, I put my kids into sport. I put the discipline into them. I surround them with the right thing. But then life has still got this 50-50 chance of my kid being completely rebellious for 5, 6, 7 years, whatever that time frame may be. Then if you look at kids to this day, we are grown up to be say you have to be strong. You know, if life throws something at you, take it in and just take it on. You know, don't try and seek help for it. I'm a parent. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you. My kid is 7 years old, 9 years old, 12 years old, 14 years old. They're taking a particular sport seriously. What do I do right now? How do I approach this and to say that, yes, on the one side, he might be... So let's say it's not a professional view.
Mm.
He might... That's not necessarily the goal. But psychology helps with so much more than just the sport that I'm in.
Psychology.
How does a parent start this? Where do we start with all of this, Mariette? And what would be your advice to parents to say, I think that life is far different than, let's say, 40 years ago or 30 years ago when we were raising kids. You know, I could still play tok-toki at night in my area and the neighbors would take us home. That's the low kids from number 17, you know, and we would be 3 kilometers down the road. It was that type of community environment. And then the parents would bring them, they would, you know, say to us, why did you play tok-toki? But then they might even have tea with the parents. That's the environment. So we had no fear of life and being hurt. You know, it was just we could be kids. But nowadays... No, we're locked up in estates. We are limited to where the movement is. When your kids go out at night, it becomes the biggest stress of anything. What do parents do at the moment? At what stage do we start investing in psychology to our kids?
And I think also when.
And when.
Yes.
You know, when is that important? And I'm saying not necessarily just with a professional mindset. Because out of 100 kids, there might only be 2 that can become a professional. So let's speak to the general public a little bit. Okay. When do you do and how do you start that?
To me, psychology, not just psychology per se, because I'm a counseling psychologist and I specialize in sports psychology. Sports psychology links to performance psychology. And it's to help a person and even a young kid with developing. Psychology has to do with the mind. And in schools, and even at home, parents do, like you say, the morality is there, the principles you teach your children and values in life. But let's take the sports psychology. I think every child, every person that wants to not just do sport, but it's to develop, to help you to bring the best out of yourself, whatever your abilities are. You know, sometimes we think of academics. And a person would say, yes, but you, they work so hard. It's not just about the hard work. Because you can put in a hang of a lot of effort and you can work on that mathematics or the English or the language, whatever. And you can get 90%+, or you can make it in 51%.
Yeah.
But it's...
That was more me.
But what did you see to do that? Yes, people have talents. And talent doesn't mean parents need to see, oh, here's the next world champ, the next Louis Oosthuizen, the next Ernie Els, the next Christian Besaidenhout, and those things. No, no, no. It's to help your child to actually develop these, not just the talent, because that's for the technical coaches, the abilities, his mental strength, his emotional certainty. Because people often say, what is mental strength? Mental strength is exactly that. How do you handle situations?
Yeah, adversary. How do
that belief in yourself, even that you know, hey, it's okay, I've done the work. I know I understand this. So yes, I'll pass my test. For those that can get between 50 and 60, it's not just to be able to get 80%, or not just to be there and get a medal or win the gold.
Yeah.
So to me, sports psychology, and this is what I love to do, is I love to work with people. I love to help people to help themselves, because that's what I can do. There's no magic.
Yeah.
Then I would have
magic potion.
No, I would have been exported to Mars, believe me. But it's to help a person to help him or herself.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you think of a young child doing sport, it's that child, yeah, it's very nice to win, because if you win, you get a lot of attention. But what does it mean? You know, yeah, winning means I'm good. But now you come, the same child can be in a bigger competition and come second or third, yeah, or even fourth. And then I would say, hey, does that mean you're not good anymore? No. But it's about get the best out of yourself. I always say to the runners and people where time is a factor, your opponent is the stopwatch. You came maybe fourth or sixth, but did you improve your time?
Yeah.
If the time's improved, you can say, yes, I'm getting faster. I'm getting better. I'm improving. But we have, in our country, there is a thing of outcome goal. We outcome-orientated, result-orientated.
I mean, it's almost the end of the country or end of the world if the Springboks don't win.
Yeah, but it's the same in New Zealand. You know, when the All Blacks not winning, it's the end of them. No, it's not. That is a perception. It's to actually help a person develop, get insight. Help them to think and be smart and say, hey, okay, today I played tennis and my serve went into the net most times. But, okay, I stayed cool and calm. Many of my young clients would say, first thing, the first positive is, I stayed calm. You say, in Afrikaans, they would say, yes, Tani. I didn't get angry with myself. And then I would say, fantastic. Well done for you. Pat yourself on the shoulder. Because next time, this same child in a different situation would also be, hey, come on, stay cool and calm. Because if you're cool and calm, you can think, you can focus, you can judge better, you can make better decisions.
You can do better.
You can do better. Because this same child can grow up with the 20 years along the line, that same person can be a businessman or in any other career and stay cool and calm. Whether you're a businessman or whether you're a brain surgeon, the situation you find yourself. So Gulen kom, trust yourself. So, for me, working with young athletes, and I'm serious to say, I always say my clients is from 8 to 80.
Yeah.
I actually do have a golf client. He's in his 70s. He came to see me for the first time in his life in his 70s because he wants to improve his golf game. Well done for him. He's well an done, amateur. Yeah. Well done.
What a brave move.
Also, yes. There's a stigmatism of going to psychologists even from in the day. Oh, you know what sure. I mean?
So remember, the people see psychology. You're a psychologist. Yes, you work with mad people. Yes, Mal.
I'll quote Eric. He said, I see a psychologist not because I'm Mal.
Yes.
It's exactly. Because I... But Mariette, it's so obvious to us when we are older. So, and Arthur would know this as well, you know, from a professional sports perspective and from a business perspective, the people that remain calm under stressful situations are the ones you always want. They are the outstanding performers. Mm. They are normally the people that can get just as passionate about something.
Yes.
But when the time comes, they can be calm and say, let's take a step back and let's look at the bigger picture.
Mm.
And in sport, we talked about this on the show before. We think, even a normal amateur from the side can see everybody on the, let's say, the top 130 or 50 in the world has got skills. Everybody, one of them. They can all chip, they can putt, they can all swing, drive.
They're all even.
They've got all the gear. They can't say this one's got better gear. They've got access to everything. But the mental shift is what makes the difference on a Saturday and on a Sunday.
Yes.
And we see it, but we then go, oh, he was just born with it. But that is the stigma that needs to be reduced to say, no, there's a team around him that has helped him to become the person he is today.
Exactly.
So seek out help.
That takes a long time. There's also this thing of, okay, I'm seeing a psychologist, now magic is going to happen. Near. The magic will happen when you are willing to stick to the process. Also the process of seeing, consulting with the psychologist.
Do the work.
I love to say, and you also used the word, Albert, tools, because I refer to mental skills as tools. Because a skill sounds like something you were supposed to be born with.
Yeah.
But a tool is something that you can do something with, and anyone can learn a tool. How to work with it any time, any stage of life, any age. So to have those mental tools is to equip yourself, to be equipped to handle the demands, the challenges of life, of your sport, of where the situations and the circumstances you find yourself in, to be able to handle it and still be able to cope with it and bring the best out of yourself. To perform according to your abilities. The stigma is something that comes still from previous century, that you go to a psychiatric hospital, oh, shame, you lost your mind. You can't lose your mind. I mean, then we can go look for it and find it. It's like people say, oh, I lost my confidence. And then I say, I sometimes feel like it to say, oh, where? Let's just go back and go pick up confidence. Yeah. But you actually shrink your confidence. You make confidence that's supposed to be as big as Goliath inside. You shrink it. So confidence becomes like little thumb. Now, who can be successful if your confidence, which equals your emotional certainty, the trust that you can have in yourself, is as big as little thumb? So the good news is that you didn't lose your confidence. You just shrink it. So confidence goes and sit and hide at the back. And that is where I feel the clients I've been working with for a few decades now is they are more able to do what they do with certainty, to trust themselves. And sometimes I have had golfers who started off playing golf and they were great amateurs, and then later along the lines, the line, they changed because they left, okay, professional golf, no, I gave it a go, but they go in a different direction. And they're absolutely so successful. And it's not just golfers. It can be a tennis player. It can be because in school, hockey player, rugby players. I mean, it's not just the fact that, okay, I'm fast and I can run with the ball and I can kick a ball, so I'm a good professional rugby player. And sometimes it's that every young person who can hit that little white ball with a club, it's not you're not going to get all those millions 5 years from now on, or 10 years or 20 years from now on. But in whatever you do, if you, I find the people I worked with, they become just more confident. They're more positive because I love the positive outlook.
And do you find that across life or just in the sport life?
Across life. Yeah. Across life. Yeah. Very often mothers would say to me, yes, what did you do with my child? You know, the first time a mother said that to me, I thought, okay, what did I do? And I quickly thought, okay, was it something that was
said?
Yeah. And I said, why? Because she said to me, my child enrolled himself for the debate team. And I thought, good for him.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. Because he built his confidence. He became so certain about himself. And the fact that in his sport, and he was a cricketer, in his sport, he became better and better, and he did not end up as a professional cricket player. But also in his himself.
Yeah, it served him well in life.
Exactly. It served him just well in life. And to me, that is what parents, that's a gift that you can give you to your child instead of just tell the child, okay, here's the best bicycle money can buy. Here's the best clubs money can buy. Here's the best tennis racket. Or here's the best coach. And you have four coaches, so yes, private coaching. Help the child to develop mentally. And it's not only for children. It's for anyone, any person, at any stage of life. Because it helps you as a person to be a better person in any way you want to be. Better is a word, but what's better? Some is to just have better relationships, more relationships that can be enjoyed. Some is to do more studies and they think, hey, actually I can go into this direction to think, wow, I do have the skills. It's to run your business in a more successful way, in a more productive way. So there's always the fact that if you are mentally more skilled, you are in contact with yourself, your emotional part, your physical, your technical, academical part, and even your spiritual part, whatever the spiritual denomination
you are. I think if you even look at just in the general in life, okay, you get guys that do not know how to switch, let's call it the light or your brain, on and off. It's always on.
Yeah,
it's like their brains are ticking all the time. And that obviously affects your health physically because of the stress factor that involves that, you know. You know, you could have a heart attack or other small factors. I don't want to go into detail. I'm not qualified for that. But just as a general person, whether it's a businessman or the general person, you know, turning your light on and off is crucial for yourself.
It is crucial for yourself, and it also involves the enjoyment you have, because one needs to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing, how hard you work, how much you practice, how long hours you spend, enjoy it. because it gives you a purpose in life. So the enjoyment is a very essential factor, aspect, I think. Because, yeah, switch on and switch off, it is, I'm now focused and I need to go. And, yeah, you can get people, they one-track-minded. They just focus, achieve these goals. But along the line, so many things were missed out.
But Marietta, we know this because if you, and I mean not realizing we know it, so I speak about this quite a bit. Let's say an amateur golfer. We see it in our own lives. Halfway they have two beers. All of a sudden that swing is in rhythm. Mm. And birdies are falling. And yes, the first one I'm like, what happened? Then I'm like, okay, well, the two beers, whatever those two beers did, whether it switched off a particular concern in your head or whatever it is, you didn't overthink it, you just swang, it relaxed you. And so that is the power of that. And that's where you can train somebody without having the two beers.
Exactly.
That their mind is switched on in that capacity.
Yes.
Naivety, I say, in our offices, is a strength. So when you, let's say today I say to you, Marietta, for you to become a sports psychologist, you're going to go through this. You have to study this. You're going to deal with people here. This is the rough income you're going to get. It might stop you from taking the process on because you're like, oh, I have to go through that, then go through that, then go through that. If you're naive to the process, you just dive in.
Mm.
And then all the learnings that goes with it then starts hitting you as you go along. And I always say when somebody comes into if you look at it at corporate employment now or big technical companies, they don't want people from university anymore because the university puts a particular mindset or frame of mindset. When they come out of school, they'd rather have them immediately so they can open their minds to what's possible and what's not, you know, what's possible and what's not. But we lose that naivety. And I always feel, I try and say to everybody, yeah, we need to keep it. So if somebody says to you, this is the journey and the struggles you're going to go through before winning a Masters, it might almost be too daunting to take on. But if you are oblivious to it, then you take it on with a lot more passion. What does that journey look like? So at 8 years old, now we know, even younger, that it doesn't necessarily have to be a professional focus, but the psychology will help them in their greater part of their life. But what happens to us when we are young, naive in certain ways, but then we get older?
Mm.
18, 19, 20, 22, 23, whatever that time cycle might be.
All of a sudden, the putts do not go in.
Do not go in. They do not fall. Then what I see is, it's a jump, and then at 31 and 32, and I'm not putting a particular age on it, Eric Van Rooyen being a great example.
Mm.
Now, at his age, he said to us the other day, I only feel like I'm starting.
Mm.
So imagine that one, if a youngster can just take that, don't be so harsh on yourself at 16 and 17. Mm. Here's a guy that says at 32 or 33, now, watch me now.
Exactly.
You've still got so much time to achieve and everything you've wanted to achieve.
His talents are there and he puts in the work and us, but it's the development. He has the mental skills. He learned those tools.
Yeah.
And he's using them.
Yeah.
But it's also the experience.
Yes.
And he actually, and many people do that, most people that's successful, got insight into himself or herself.
Mm. And you say, what do you mean when you say that? Just a rough idea.
Okay. A person, because sometimes the person when they're young, and I'm now, it's no names.
Not generalizing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No generalization. I get those young ones. They are here around 12, 13, 14 years, and then the parents would say, oh, she's so perfectionistic. Everything must be perfect. The person is driving himself or herself. I must be the best. I must this. Yes, the talent is there. And yes, so like you say, the performance goes very well. But then there's a stage where you start to think, okay, what's wrong with me? What happened to my swing? What happened to the putts? And it's not that something happened. You might have become unknowingly, sometimes you're just too outcome focused. I must be the best. I must win. I must make this. And then that causes physical tension.
Okay.
Anxiety even.
Okay.
Sometimes even panic. And it causes you to start to think away from the course or the court or the pool or the track. Start to think, yes, but I need to do this. Yes, if I can just run faster, if I can just make more putts, if I can just do this, then I'll be okay. So you push yourself. And there comes a time in life when you realize, hey, you know what? I do have the physical abilities, the talent. And yes, I do have that inner motivation. I want to. This is what I choose, even if there are other possibilities. Could have become a this, a this, a this, a that. I choose to do what I do now. Like, choose to be a professional golfer. Yes, I've been through all this mental tools, develop my tools, learn the mental skills, do the relaxation, do the positive self-talk, setting those goals, have the positive mindset, focus on the present, use my imagery. But later, it's like a sun just coming up mentally to realize I love what I'm doing. This is what I want to do. I'm willing to persevere. I'm willing to put in the effort. But there's a more enjoyment. Also the realization that sometimes I need to listen to my body.
Yeah.
And even if rest your body is then what's necessary. Like with Eric van Rooyen. Rest your body. Do it. Accept it with a positive mindset, but set your goals
and start. Even said that this is what I want to do.
This is what he said.
This is what this is my whole life, and
exactly.
You know, I don't want to quote him, but you can see that he doesn't want to stop. He wants to see where it's
going
to take. Yeah.
He is going to be very successful still, and he is successful because we also need to look at what is success. Like I said, and you said that success, some people think success is to be the number one.
Yeah.
To stand on the podium on the one, that middle one, get the gold medal, be the richest, be the fastest, be the strongest. Of course, sometimes, I mean, if you are in a one-on-one like box, like MMA, or like thing, of course, if you win your fight, yes, you come out the good, the best. And it's to drive yourself, but also to love it. And there comes a time in a person's life where you, and I always think, and not think, I know, I say it's because of that earlier years, maybe 10 years ago, already he started or she started to realize, hey, but my mental side is that important side. My mental side, how do I feel? What do I say to myself? How do I see the fact that I missed the top 10? Yeah, sometimes golfers miss the cut. But if you are giving up and say, oh, no, it's not for me, I'm not going to make it, you will go downwards. But if you say, okay, this is how it is, what do I need to do to improve?
Correct.
What do I need to work on? What do I need to improve? Maybe just take it more easy. Go out there and go play golf. Because people tell me very often, you know, when I play with my friends, yes, I play so good.
Yeah.
But put me in a competition situation. Yeah. Why can't I perform on the Sunshine Tour or the Bushveld or wherever? Like I'm doing with my friends.
Yeah.
Because when you're in that competition situation, and this goes for all competition, all of a sudden, you become too result-orientated, too outcome-orientated. And it's also your thinking. If a golfer says, now just don't miss this putt, you're going to miss it. Yeah. But if you say, all right, this is what I have.
I do this every day.
I know I'm good at putting.
Yeah.
Let's hold this putt.
Yeah.
Then you can hold a 40-footer.
Yeah.
Because I've done it before. I practice and I trust myself.
Yeah.
I focused on the right things, and that present moment focus, that's so important.
I can definitely use myself as an example. So played a lot of sport in school, and I was pretty good at every sport that I played, right? And once I started getting older, I focused on just a couple of sports, and I wanted to focus. And for me, it was either tennis or golf that I wanted to take as a profession. And while I was playing those sports, and when I was a kid, I got into a zone. Okay, I felt like the world was stopped, was literally still, right? And that's when I was peaking, and that's when I actually played my best.
I won all the competitions.
Correct. And my father would say to me, you know, Arthur, you were in the zone today, I could see.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, how did you get into that zone? And I literally didn't know how, okay? And that's where Marietta comes in to that's give you the tools to get into that zone. Mm. It's not like she's going to have a conversation with you, you leave, and now you get it,
yeah.
And it's a secret,
yeah.
And you get into that zone. That's not it.
Mm-mm.
You've got to stick to, she gives you the tools, you've got to do the work.
You need to go use it.
You've got to go use it. Like when I played on tour, for example, I started seeing Marietta, it was a job, okay? I would wake up, I would warm up, I would go have my breakfast, I would go hit some balls and follow a routine before I play, okay? And then play, and then I would do my homework, okay? What was my pros and cons today? What did I do great? What were the positives? What do I need to improve on today? Was it technical? Was it mental? You know, all of those things, you know? And I think kids today or really good players get to that psychology step, if you want to call it, too late. Okay. We spoke about the 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. If that's where some people have that extra, edge on you.
Yeah.
Because it's already ingrained in them. They've done the work. It almost comes naturally. Now it's just sticking to your processes and routines and, you know.
Yeah.
You it's there. But when you start, it's literally, it feels like homework, and you need to get into it and figure yourself. And every individual is different, and I'm sure that's very tough to work on, because some guys are very perfectionistic, some guys are very slapcut.
Yep.
So now you need to now figure out, how do I get through to each individual, you know? So I think it's important for the listeners, whether it's the fathers or the up-and-coming sportsmen or mothers, that there's no secret to this. There's no stigmatism to it.
No.
You have to do it in order to improve from a sportsmanship point of view or from a mental
point of view. To get the best out of yourself.
To get the best out of yourself. And I think it's crucial to start early. I think I started a bit too late because I was very erratic. You know, I would have a couple of good tournaments and then I would go through a thing. And I didn't understand why. Like, why am I on today and then tomorrow I'm off?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Tomorrow
it's like
you were more focused
about it's not like
outcome.
I've breathed in poison or something in the air and now I can't swing a golf club.
Yeah.
You know, and
because
I'm sure you
were
get it.
Uptight the
Correct.
Second day. You were tensed up because you were thinking how wonderful it will be to win this tournament. Or what if I don't win?
Or you're already preparing your speech.
That's it. like Tom Watson. Yeah.
What am I going to say?
What am I
going to
say?
5 holes left. I've got a 3-shot lead and all of a sudden snap hook out of bounds and we're making a triple. And now I need to forget about the speech and get going again.
Now I need to make excuses instead of a speech.
Exactly. You choked.
Yeah,
now you're a choker.
Yeah, now you're a choker.
Now,
you know?
Stop labeling that, because that's what people do.
But this is, sorry to say that.
But I want to look onto what you said.
But it's just the stigmatism on what people think.
Exactly.
You get me.
And so what will they think about me if I lose? They can think what they want.
Mm.
It's what you think of yourself.
Correct. I'm starting to realize that very much
very
in my older age.
Very important. Yeah. And that comes with older
age.
It does, That's exactly. It comes. Somewhere when you are here in your 30s, it hits you.
Yeah.
It's like now. That's why I say insight.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, that light goes on. People can think what they want.
Mm.
I am doing what I love to do. I'm doing what I find I'm good at. Of course, you need to be able to do it. So I'm pursuing this. And I want to hook on to that, what Arthur said, because that in the zone. Many people say, Marietta, just help me to get in the zone. Okay, but we need to start with your thinking. What are you saying to yourself? It's not just, okay, click, I'm in the zone.
Mm.
In the zone means that present moment focus. Just focusing what my body is doing. An example is gymnasts, divers. I mean, it takes a few seconds to do that routine. In that golf swing, that putt. I mean, golf is a slow sport. You have lots of time.
Too much time to think.
Too much time.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I love to teach the golfers how their thoughts should be. It should be positive. But what is positive? But go back to the focus. When you were young, Arthur, to go back to what you said, you were focused on the task at hand. Mm-hmm. Hit that ball securely, purely. Get it over the net. Get it in, put strength to it. And that was your focus. That's why dad and mom and everyone else looked at you. Yes, but that guy's focused. He's in the zone. That's a term that lately there was a time when everyone wanted to be in the zone. And it means just, hey, guy, focus on what you are doing now.
See? Not looking at the spectators.
Exactly. Because
is
if
your dad watching you, you want to impress him.
And you know, and if you start to look at that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to add something there. Because if you start to watch dad, hey, why is dad's expression change?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, he's like, frowning.
Yeah.
He's sitting like this. Or watch mom. All of a sudden she has an angry face. And then, oh boy, I'm going to lose. And then anxious. Tension. And what happens? You completely miss. You make a floppy.
Mm.
And now I'm a baddie.
Yeah.
And now I'm not good enough. And it goes, this is a cycle. And people think the mental side is just easy, straightforward. It's complex.
Definitely they think that.
They think it.
100%.
People would say, ach, just get your head right.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I always think, but the head is right.
Yeah.
I actually make a little joke of that in my office, and in Afrikaans, my language, it goes easier because the dad would say, hierdie mannetjie se kop is nie reg nie. And then I would look and say, but it seems right to me because his nose and his toes are showing in the same direction. Just to ease it off. Because if you are a young guy and you or a girl and you hear your head is not right, it's like, what's wrong with me? And immediately that triggers another, what's wrong with me? And then it goes another thought, maybe I'm just not good enough, I'm not as fast as she is, I'm not as strong as he is, I'm not as tall as he or she is, I'm not good enough. Now maybe I should stop. Because I don't want to feel embarrassed. I don't want my parents to feel ashamed. And it's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
The mental part, and that's why I keep on saying it, the mental part is a complex part, but once, and I make it easier to understand, because, I've been studying most part of my life. It doesn't stop.
Yeah. You're still studying.
I'm still studying. I'm still doing workshops. I'm still doing courses. I'm still studying. And to help a client, what is psychology? What is my mental side? to explain. That's why I say I have a scale. And in my language, and Arthur, yes, you said that you worked with me. I never say what's your strengths and what's your weaknesses, or this is good and this is bad. I refer to those, the not so goods or the not so positives, as OFIs. That's the word. Opportunities.
For improvement.
For improvement. Steve is still remembering it after all these years. Because I see a mistake, a not so positive, a negative, a weakness, as an opportunity for improvement. If you can improve this from a 3 out of 10 to a 6, to a 7, see, wow. I've seen a client this week, and she said, "You," it was a swimmer. See her just now, 4 weeks, and last week she had a gala, important competition, and she improved her personal best in 3 of her events, 3 of the 5. And I said, "Wow, how did you do it?" Because I want her to think, how did I do it? And she said, "You know what? I enjoyed it and I was cool and calm. And I just told myself, go, go, you can swim."
So she didn't train exceptionally harder.
Well, she did train and she applied the mental tools.
Yeah, but what I mean is it says she was already disciplined in training before she saw
you. She's a swimmer, she's a level, but her coach said maybe now it's the time to go see.
Well,
sports
from a parent's perspective, I invest that time and effort into somebody like you, but the results are shown in the field, which means that it's not an investment. It's a fantastic, it was a very well spent time and money.
That's it. Because it costs money to see me, a psychologist or a sports psychologist. It costs money, but it's well spent because that young girl is now going to stick to that and say, yes. And already I saw her this week and she said, "You know what? I have another gala coming up and I'm going to work on those other 2 events itself." Because I ask her, okay, this was your positive. What is the OFIs?
Yeah.
What do you need to improve to swim faster? That's what it's about.
And generally, if you think about it, yes, you've got to train hard and of do course all of that you need to get
train.
Better,
train is right? very hard.
But you've got to improve on yourself.
That's it, Arthur.
That is the shift.
Yes.
You know, if you're doing something with a passion and you work hard and stuff like that and you feel like you're not getting anywhere, then the answer is you've got to work on yourself to get better because you are limiting yourself.
Exactly.
And that's coming from personal experience as well. For me, I felt like time was running out.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting older. You know, yes, I'm still playing on the Sunshine Tour, but I want to play in Europe or I want to play in on the PGA. And I'm still here messing around. Or
what's wrong with me?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe I could have improved on myself, but I was realistic and I thought, you know, let's do something else.
But often you need to be realistic.
Mm.
You really need to be realistic because if you have been going on for 10 years, and I have wonderful examples also, persons that started to see me as golfers, and then there was a time, miss the cut, do not make it, miss it, become negative about myself, and become positive about myself. And I would say, what's the options?
Yeah.
Because people say, and Arthur would know, after playing, and then it's like they say, I'm not enjoying this anymore. Not meaning the game or the sport I'm doing. And we're talking about golfers now, the competitions that go out there and grind and work hard.
It could be the traveling aspect.
Also, but also there are other options.
Yes.
I have an example of a golfer. He saw me and I actually said, you know what? You're very intelligent. You have that brain. How about thinking of studying? And he actually said to me, you want me, I'm in my early 30s, to go sit at university amongst first-year students, 18 yeah. years old. And I said, so what? Who cares about age?
Yeah.
It's about what can you do?
Yeah.
And yes, it was quite a shock to him, and he actually took it up.
And didn't his golf improve as well? Or are we thinking about the same person?
No, his golf at a time improved, but he left it. And this specific, we are thinking maybe of two people. Okay. He left it and he went to study BCom. And he got his master's, his MCom, and he has a business. And he is so successful. Very successful. One day he just called me and said, I want to come and see you. And he came in and said, hey, thanks for the advice. Because he did have the courage to go and sit at the university, enroll as a first-year student amongst 18, 19 years old, and study, and he never looks back. And maybe the fact that we think also of a person, that person's golf improved.
When he started studying, because he was actually very intelligent.
Very much.
He wasn't getting personal satisfaction of just playing golf. Something was missing.
Yes.
And the minute he started studying, I think it was a UNISA, could be wrong.
Yes.
And his golf started excelling and he started playing well, winning again and whatnot because of that missing link.
But it was the cognitive stimulation. Mm. The stimulation. Cognitive means your abilities, your aptitudes, your brain abilities. Yeah. And even for sports people, I always say, remember you have four selves within the context of me and all the me's that you all. I have actually four main selves. It's my cognitive self. So what am I doing to stimulate my brain? And even if you just do crossword puzzles or read or Sudoku or do something, you stimulate your brain, your career. I mean, I keep on studying because I need to know what's the newest on the psychological field, but also to stimulate my brain, your physical self. What are you doing for body? I see people who get, they work, they spend 18 hours a day on work and sit and work, but their physical self, there's no exercise.
Yeah.
Not even, not talking about sport, but just exercise.
Yeah. Going for a walk for
30 minutes. Going for a walk. So I immediately start to introduce an exercise program because the physical self is shrinking. There's the emotional self, which involves your relationships. First of all, with self. How do I feel? How towards myself? What is my self-talk? Do I think Marietta is okay? Even if I'm not okay, I think it's okay not to be okay. Great. But then my family, my friends, my community. Later on, just to be in a supermarket and to be friendly to the cashier and say, hi, how are you? That's your emotional self. But then your fourth self is your spiritual self. People are actually sometimes surprised and say, what? Do I have a spiritual self? Yes, you do. Your spiritual self is that part of you, and no matter what denomination, but it's just that part that also wants to be developed. So your four selves, if you're a sports person and you only go into sport and it's physical, 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 what is happening to your cognitive self or your emotional self or your spiritual self? You see? If you're that academic fundi and you only go into the cognitive, work, 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 work. Oh boy, you know what? I see so many of them becoming depressed. I get people in my office, they down, they negative, they depressed. Oh, tell me about, how's your day? How's your work? No, I work. And with COVID worldwide, they started to work from home. So there's no contact to the outside world.
Yeah.
I'm just at home, working. the physical self is shrinking. It's gone. The emotional self, the spiritual self. So there should be balance. That's actually the secret. Balance.
Mm.
Just balance. I am working. I have friends. I love people. I need people in my life. I'm talking to myself about myself now. I love my work. Yes, I can spend hours on end just talking to my clients, helping them. I always say I have a 24/7 cell phone. You can call me wherever and whenever. I'm there for you. But I also attend to my physical self.
Yeah. So that you can be ready for whatever life throws at you. Because
the mind-body connection, and I'm a road runner.
I was just about to compliment you and say, if you go to Marietta's office, you can see the hundreds of medals she has from her history and
road running. Yes. Cycling.
What a
and
mental
I'm still
game.
A road runner. And last year, my youngest daughter and husband introduced me and my husband into trail running. So next weekend, it's the Run the Berg, two-day stage run there in the Drakensberg.
And
I hear it's, I'm going to you are Marie. Busy with that.
Yes. All of a sudden, my physical self feels very uncomfortable
next
to
you. But
you
just need to work on your physical self. But the fact is, healthy body, healthy mind. Healthy mind works to healthy body. I just have that. This is me. I like the mind-body connection. And what everything the mind stands with. That's all your thoughts, all your emotions, all your actions, those things, your focus. But people also need to exercise. You need that. Your physical self needs that to become more fit, to work on your muscle strength, your suppleness. I mean, I sometimes look at people, they're in their 50s or 60s, and I say, oh boy, that body finds it difficult. There's no more suppleness. So people owe it also to themselves to work on their physical side. It's not to become now and a sports person.
Yeah.
It's to just do something.
Yeah.
And if you're a golfer, instead of going on the cart, walk and walk briskly. So
it's like you say, it's not necessarily to say tick the box of physicality, it's because it serves your mind well in the day.
Yes, it serves the mind
correct.
Well.
Correct.
Yeah, it serves you well.
It serves. Even to do, there's a mental tool, I call it your deep breathing tool, which is your relax, a tool that helps you to relax, meditation. It's good to do that.
But
even if you spend, three minutes a day somewhere in your morning, just to sit very quietly with yourself. Just sit.
But it feels a bit silly, Marietta.
And breathe.
And I don't relax. I'm not challenging what you're saying here. I'm just speaking from a general sense.
Yes.
So I'm a busy man.
Yes.
You know, and I've learned now, certainly not in my younger years, that people don't impress me anymore if they say I work 16 hours a day. I sometimes question that, and then I go, how stable are they?
Mm.
How mentally capacity are? So I used to be like, hard work.
Yeah.
But now everybody in our offices understand you must work with purpose. I'd rather you spend an hour on something than 4 hours by doing it far more with the deliberation
effectively. And purposefully.
And I'd rather you go and run for half an hour after that.
Exactly.
And rather take a break than you saying, I sweated it out at the office today. So I think we need to really say, that's just a bunch of nonsense now. I think that hard work doesn't translate into productive, satisfying, happy health.
Hard work also doesn't equal success, but it's necessary.
But there's, I can tell you now that there would be a stigma of saying in the morning, you know, taking the deep breaths, because it's not immediate, because we live in an instant gratification.
Yeah.
I always say, I wish the first golf and Hideki for me is if you when he won the Masters, his caddy went and respected the last green. that he was on.
Yes.
Then I say to myself, people don't understand what a different cultures they were raised in.
Very
a
different.
Cat, he walks off there, you know, he's raised in a very, where he's like, huh, I'm going to go grab a beer, life's over. Mm. Where the cat, he takes, a cat like Adek, he takes that moment
it
in.
Was
a
it was so nice to see.
So nice to see. And I say to myself, I can see that guy's stable mentally.
Yes.
You know, this exactly. is, those are the hard, silent workers. They might not be the guys that come into a crowd and take over the conversation or they stand out in the crowd, but when they're on the course, they can beat you at any given stage. And those are very powerful people. Then I said to myself, okay, this morning I'm exercising. Now I have to go and sit. So, you know, for me particularly, and like you say, it doesn't matter what domination, but I take a moment in prayer. But even my prayer, I speed up. Because I'm like, I don't have time, God, to go into all the different details here. I'm just going to highlight and speed it up and hopefully tick that box in a sense. And I'm still guilty of it today. So, I hear you what you're saying. We need to take deep breaths. We need to take a little bit of time mentally for ourselves. But after all these years, there's so many books, great people that speak about this, but it doesn't necessarily translate into people accepting it.
Yes, but people think it takes up time. And you know what? I always tell my clients, at every red robot you stop, or even be in slow traffic, because if you live in South Africa, in Gauteng, you have slow traffic. Many times, even on the national highway. Use that time. I do it myself. There was a time when I had to rush, and then all of a sudden, one day I thought, listen, Marietta, you are going to get yourself into the psychiatric hospital, so start to practice what you preach.
So what she's saying to you, Albert, is you need help.
Yeah.
You need help, so listen,
She identified that before the podcast.
Yeah. Listen.
Took a 1 minute.
But I think.
Now, but I want to say what they need to do at the retreat.
Okay. Yeah.
Breathe. Just, there's no magic, no getting into a lotus position and do yoga. Just sit with the steering wheel in your hands, and if you have a hand gear car like me, you can do it with your feet on the clutch and the brake. But relax. Breathe. 2, 3, 4 breaths. I had a guy of a big, big business. He was the CEO of his business. He came to see me and helped me to expand my business many years ago. And he took it very seriously. So before board meetings, before important things, he would tell his PA, no calls.
Because
he'd take these 3 minutes and he would push back his chair and just sit and breathe and just focus on sitting and focus on how does it feel to just breathe and just clear your mind for a few moments. Think, okay, I'm going out there, board meeting, or out to the first tee, or out to the start of a race. I'm ready. This is what I'm going to focus on. Just to feel that calmness.
Yeah.
Just to be ready. People think you need to meditate, and meditation is something that's still in this modern era doesn't sound very good to certain denominations.
Yeah.
That's why I just say, relax. Deep breathing, because you can call it whatever you like, but it's unnecessary to do it for an hour. It's unnecessary to sit and have 30 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, a few breaths. If you just before you, or if you're a golfer or if a tennis player or whatever, and you're there in the locker room, before you go out, just breathe, relax all your muscles. Because with the deep breathing, psychology, I think it's 2 centuries ago, went to borrow it from the martial arts and say, hey, these guys can do many great things with exhale and relaxing their muscles. So see what we can do. And that's what you do. You relax yourself. You just clear and quiet your mind for a few moments. And then think, I'm out there. This is what I'm going to focus on. And that's how you get into that zone. Just focus on the task at hand. But also have that inside certainty, that emotional certainty, which I call confidence. Of, I know what to do. I can do it. I'm ready for it. I'm well prepared.
I'm in control.
I'm in control. That's it. So even at the Red Robots, Albert, sit, breathe. You do have the time.
Yeah. No, I like that practical tool that you've just given us.
Sorry, so Arthur. I played quite a bit in India and got to know a lot of the Indian golfers there. And a lot of them meditated, if you had to call it. It was part of their beliefs. And we used to meditate or do deep breathing.
Yes.
And it fascinated me. So I started to look into it a bit more and dive into it. And it's not against my beliefs or anything, but I could see these guys were just in a very good state all the time. And they're... No offense to the guys in India, their ability wasn't world beaters.
Absolutely. Yes.
But they managed to do it, and I'm looking, how the hell is this guy doing it?
Yeah.
So for me, I started meditating, if you had to call it, when I wake up, first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I wanted to do it for 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes. I know that sounds a lot.
No, but it's a good thing.
It created more mental strength because it is not easy to do 15-20 minutes.
It's a focus exercise.
Correct. So I thought if I could get mentally tough by doing this for X amount of time, it's going to benefit me on the golf course. And I'm not saying everyone needs to do it, but it's just an exercise, right? And I remember when I was an amateur, sometimes, you know, you slap khat and you rush. You rush on the range, you rush to the putting green, you rush to the tee box, and then
you rush your swing.
You rush everything, and you start off badly, and then you have to bring it back and whatnot.
And so before you know it, the 18th hole is finished. Before you know it is finished, and you're like, why didn't I just take a moment to calm down?
Correct. Sorry, so that is the benefit of
hindsight.
Of deep breathing, meditation, just to get into that mode or state.
Yeah. Quiet mindset.
Correct.
But did that help around the house? Did that help with the other stuff around
you? It helped with my relationship because I was more relaxed.
It helps to be more patient.
Me thinking things through, making decisions, and also looking, on the golf course when I was doing it, I started more like, okay, I hit my shot, and then in between shots, I was almost still in that state. Like, okay, how beautiful is that bird?
Walk and enjoy.
Or you look at the windy. You know, you can think, yes, why is it windy today? But look at the trees moving.
I hear you.
No, but that's
it's a change of mindset.
Correct.
That's what I agree with
you. So it's there's so many. What I'm trying to say, there's so many mental tools that Marietta or someone can help you.
Well, there are four main mental tools.
Correct. Yeah.
Which breathing is one of.
Yeah.
And let's call it exercises or homework.
Yes,
or,
it is. But you were willing to do the homework. I get many guys saying, too much work for me.
I had a file and I had two books.
I'm proud
of you. One book in my golf bag, one book next to my bed.
Way, Arthur.
And listen, you know, sometimes you have that long day, eh? Like wake up, you 6:30 tee off, you go wake up early, you wake up at 4, you go play, it's hot, then you got to go practice, then you go have dinner and you cool down, and now you get into bed, now you still got to do your homework.
Yeah.
You know, or your work. Let's call it not homework, your work. And it's tough, but some guys have the ability to do it.
They do it. It's that self-discipline.
Eric's a great example.
Yes, he is.
He will put that first above anything, whether it's replying to a friend or...
Also his meditation.
Correct. Mm. So that... what's the right word of... the discipline to do that.
Yes, self-discipline.
Key. Yeah.
Another stupid example of myself once I stopped playing.
No stupid example.
Yeah.
Good example of myself. Okay. When I started True Fit and got that going and whatnot, and thought, okay, let me start this for 2-3 years and then I'll maybe give it a bash just for a bit of change, you know. I felt tired, you know. And obviously it never got to that point. But now when I go play, you know, a competition or you know, around, there's always going to be, whether it's for money or in a Saturday comp, everything feels so easy. Listen, I don't practice. Yeah. I don't hit balls. Yeah. I don't go putt on the putting green.
Because you're more relaxed.
Because that pressure of what I had back then is gone. Shooting under par all the time, I'm like, where was this person when I needed to be there? Obviously now I can use myself as an example, and I always want to help people. That's that's my kickback in life right now, is I want to help. So, yes, I might use myself as an example, but it's good to learn and know where those balancing points are. Exactly. You know what I mean? So,
I want to add something.
Yeah, thanks, Arthur. It's relatable.
Deep breathing. No, just with the relax. Because it's not just to play a good golf game or to relax before you hit the shot or whatever. It's also, you know, people go to the dentist and or to the doctor or for some medical procedure. And then it's like uptight. I mean, poor dentists, they are seen as they hurt people. And many of my clients tell me that, hey, you know what? I've done my deep breathing when I was there in the dentist chair. And all of a sudden, it was more comfortable. Even if you go if you have to go to a pathologist like to draw blood, if you sit there and you tense up your muscles because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
You tense up.
Your veins sort of like go away.
That's it. But if you go sit, and believe me, I do it myself. If you go sit, and that's what many of my clients say, they use their tools and that breathing relax tool to relax the muscles. And then it's, hey, it wasn't actually sore. Or when you have to get an injection. Now with COVID, with the... what is the
what
are you talking about?
To get your jab, the jab. I noticed so many people standing there, and they would go, "Ooh, ooh."
That's why that thing was sore, because you like.
Yeah. So relax. It's not only to play a great shot or to move faster and better and more supple. It's to help you in your daily life.
Yeah,
just to be relaxed. And to be calm and have that quiet mind. It's good for you. I always call it mental Prozac. Because a certain age of people will know about Prozac. It was that feel-good tablets that the doctor gave you.
Instant gratification.
Yes, but why take a chemical thing if you can take a mental thing?
Yeah.
Yourself, it's much more healthier. Your own positive thoughts, your own just, hey, calm down. It's okay, relax, and breathe. So that's the mental Prozac.
So you make yourself depend on yourself. You create the tools for yourself to deal with all of that.
Exactly.
Because chemicals are always short-term.
Yes, of course.
And long-term, it has a very bad effect.
But on the long-term, your mental is forever and ever. And
but
there's only positive side effects. There's no negative side effects.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. My brother is a heart surgeon, right? A pediatric heart surgeon. And he...
I'm intimidating, Arthur.
Hey?
I'm intimidated.
No, but just... sorry, man. It might be unrelated, but obviously...
No, but he has to apply his mental
strength. I tell you, I want that guy to see a psychologist before he operates on me.
No, but that's what I'm trying to say. Listen. Like, he obviously has to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Very well.
You're working in a hole this big.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Stressful.
He has to prepare, okay, and he has to get into his mental state.
Yes.
And what he does is breathing.
Be task-focused.
Correct. Stick to this task at hand.
Mm.
Get your...
Trust yourself.
Because your hands can't shake.
No.
So you've got to control your body, which includes deep breathing, as we've discussed.
Trust yourself.
Correct.
Be confident about what you know and your skills.
One little slip and listen.
Yeah.
That's it.
But if he starts to think about one little slip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful, actually, example. Mm. Thank you. Because, yes, they do a lot of any surgeon. preparation, mental preparation.
Yeah. They probably have a routine that they will stick to every single time to follow a process to know, okay, I'm ready, let's go.
And he has to be focused. Yeah. He has to be cool and calm. And I am very sure your brother spends a few minutes just relaxing, calming his mind, give himself that positive message, I'm ready for this, and thinking, I'm going, I know what I do, I can do it, and the outcome will be successful.
Mm.
But if he thinks, don't, never, wait, watch out. So what? It's a great example. It's a very good example.
So whether it's golf.
Or whether, you know what, I want to
matter.
Add.
Mm.
It's for any person. Mm. It's very interesting. Michael Schumacher, he was one of my heroes. And it is known about how he spent hours on mental preparation for his races.
Yeah.
Hours doing his breathing relaxation. And I want to say to the people listening, some people can talk about meditation, but meditation to the man on the street is like you need to go sit somewhere. And
somewhere
go,
in a class, yeah.
That's why I just use the word, do your breathing, your relaxation and your quietness. Your quiet time. And whether you pray in that quiet time or whether you just relax and clear your mind and think nothing, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's your choice. Schumacher was known for doing his meditation, his breathing, to relax body, to quiet mind. Because you needed to focus. Task at hand. He did a lot of imagery. He imagined, like a golfer would imagine a shot, and a tennis player, he would imagine going around that race course. And he also, and this is what, also imagine the what if. What if somebody wants to pass from the inside? What if he wants to pass around? How am I going to handle this situation? He needed to be cool and calm, whatever the situation or the circumstances. Schumacher was a very positive person. He learned, and this is, nobody's born with a positive mindset.
Yeah.
We learn to think and talk positive. Because what do we do normally? We talk about the not, don't.
But we also train because all the media talks to us about is sensational stories. That's how we also get, we it's not like it's interesting to know this teacher dedicated 20 years of her life to her kids and she made that school better. It's not interesting to hear about.
No.
It's far more interesting to hear about the drama that goes on every single day.
Nowadays.
And it's sort of how our brain, you know, gets fed as well.
But that's it. But let me just finish with Schumacher. He filled his mind with, this is how I'm going to handle this situation.
Yeah.
And Arthur would know, as a golfer, we worked on what if. What if the wind blows today?
Yeah.
What if it's raining? What if I have an unlucky bounce there and my ball rolls and rolls and splash into the water? Am I going to become upset and strangle my caddy? No, no, no. Stay cool and calm. So he's a very good example. And many of the nowadays Formula One races, they are into the mental work.
Yeah.
Because if you want to be successful in whatever you do in life, you need to work on your mind. You need to have that positive mindset. You need to be cool and calm and confident, to trust yourself. And Imagery is a fantastic tool, but it's something that you need to learn. Mm. Imagine how you're going to handle a situation should it come up.
Yeah.
Imagine success. But then, when you're out there, focus on the task at hand. Be in the zone.
And you see it also with Formula One because it's younger championships. So it's obviously yielding, you know, so that you are, I mean, Schumacher was 25 on his first championship. And I think Verstappen, 21 or 22?
21, I
think. So he had to have a mental capacity almost like a Schumacher, but 4 years younger.
Yes. Yes.
So they had to somehow not enforce that onto his brain, but help him with programs and lessons to have those tools so that he can become a younger champion.
And like I'm being many of our big names and heroes and legends today has started at a young age.
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Nadal.
Yeah.
Alvarez.
Federer.
But even if you take it back to South Africa, we've got amateurs that get second position on the Sunshine Tour.
Exactly.
Because they get a spot for the day.
Yes.
And I say it's because they're naive, and hear me out, not naive to the game, but it's they don't come with all of that baggage that the Sunshine or the Tour players have already developed in their minds. He comes there, I'm just going to play golf. Of course, he's nervous, but he doesn't have the baggage that a guy that's maybe putting for petrol money, maybe putting for cut, you know, to even play the next week, a guy that has to impress his sponsorships.
Yes.
He went with no sponsorship. He's got no connotation. Mm. All he's got is his youthfulness, and he goes and he outperforms most of the professionals. We see it all the time.
Because he just focuses on what he's doing.
Yeah, but then when you put him in the professional, then he turns professional. Then all of a sudden you hear nothing about him.
Yeah.
And I always say there has to be something about that. Mm. It's impossible because it doesn't just happen once or twice. It happens all the time. Lady Aswell, that one young lady, what's her name? She played in one of the tours. Oh, man, her name will come to me.
Are you talking about the LPGA?
LPGA, Paige Spiranek. 100%. Mm. All of a sudden, you know, but then when it comes into a professional sense, then all of a sudden it all changes for
us. Because there's the challenges, the demands. It's not only about, okay, I'm a good golfer, I can play good golf and go out there and focus and play my game.
Yeah.
It's the pressure. It's the pressure of sponsors. It's the pressure of the media. It's the public pressure.
And life pressure. Because if I don't make it, I must go study. I must go work.
Exactly. And the media. Media sometimes put a hang of a lot of pressure because they
blow them up. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, oh boy, I need to do this. And it serves to shift focus.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes from. I'm thinking of a tennis player. I've been watching the tennis on television, and his sports psychologist, it was a lady who walked with him up the stairs, and then the commentator said, a last word from his sports psychologist. She was also sitting in his
Male player?
Yeah.
I must have missed that.
I think it was the young Spanish or Greek
Alvarez.
I think it was him.
He's world number one now.
Yeah.
Listen, that guy must have started at 6 years old with mental.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's the part of start. That's why before we started here and we just had a talk, I said, in South Africa, if I was the Minister of Education or the Minister of Sport, I would have introduced. That's the one thing that I think it's a lack. We need to introduce these mental aspects from great R, in that young primary school. And it's not overwhelming them.
Make it
part of the curriculum. Mm. And there are countries that this is part of the educational system. I mean, you need to learn perseverance.
Yeah.
Perseverance, resilience.
Oh.
We talk about
how to manage conflict.
That's it. But what is resilience and how to develop it? It takes years. But perseverance, positiveness. Positiveness does not mean I'm good, I'm going to win. It is to have a positive outlook.
Yeah.
And to trust and believe in yourself. Patience. So it can start in primary school at, I'm certain, the 5 years old. They can start to learn it. It should be part of nursery school education. And it should be part of it throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking, this might be very random, but, you know, high school is 5 years and primary school is 7 years. Okay. Obviously, you're not in that mental state of maturity, right? But when you, from grade one to grade seven, it felt like it was decades.
Yes.
Because you're in the moment all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're in class, then you go play with your friends, then you go to your friend's house. you're never worrying about anything. You've got no financial pressure. No, you just what is happening next. You're enjoying what you're doing right now. And that feels a lifetime ago. Mm. Yeah. Or it took a lifetime to get to high school, right? And then once the responsibility comes from when you're out of school, all of a sudden years are going like this. Because now it's like so many things happening. You get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Might be relevant. But
No,
it's very relevant because all of a sudden life's demands are there. And how do you cope with life's demands? Mm. You know, you need to still be as you was when you have only thing you needed to do is to learn the subject off by heart and go write the test. And that is what helps people. And I think if more attention would be given in our schools to mental aspects, and of course, with a great R and a great one, you start on the level of the child. There's a different way
of course.
I have a different way of working with my adult clients than working with a 7-8-year-old client, because I need to go down on their level and talk what they can understand. But this is the beginning, and to introduce that, and just to introduce, if you are a grade one child and you have difficulty with spelling, yes, of course, maybe the parents should take you for evaluation or to a speech therapist or for language therapy, or see why do you have a problem, even an auditory test. But it's also for you to say, it's okay, I will learn this, I will get it right. Or sometimes when a person, that people that have dyslexia, they find it difficult to spell, to read, to write. But I know a person many persons with dyslexia who's utmostly successful, mm-hmm. who went to university, who studies degrees. Because, okay, that's me. Accept.
Yeah.
This is me, but I still have a brain that can work. I'm good at learning, even though my spelling comes out phonetically.
Marietta, just a last question from my side. We live in a very unequal world.
Mm.
So what we are speaking about here, it's quite privilege. To access you is not
cheap. No.
And that's why I like what you say about bringing it in from a government perspective, so that it doesn't feel necessarily like it's a privileged
access for people with money.
Correct.
No, I agree with you.
We need to bring it in from a government level so that we can prepare, because imagine, there's no doubt about it that, you know, even if you say my parents wasn't very rich, you still maybe got entry fees. You still might got the first clubs from them and the first shoes.
Yeah.
There's kids that I mean, even a third hand pair of shoes is not even accessible to
them. Exactly.
You know, buying the first set of clubs is not even on the table. No. You know, we can maybe borrow clubs and hit a few, and hopefully that will go somewhere. Mm. And that's why we need to make sure we bring it down on all levels, that it isn't just access because in some way you can argument that, you know, listen guys, there's Oaks that don't even have access to all of this. There's sports people that have psychologists, they have body people that help them with movement and stretches, and still they're not successful. So some stage you go, listen, the reality is you're just not good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there's people that have none of that access, but they still manage to find a way through all of that. And that's why I hope today was inspiring for some people, that it doesn't really matter what level of footing in life has found yourself.
Exactly.
So if I'm a general guy, I'm a mother and a father today, and I don't have access to these type of things. And it's for two reasons. So when I'm 8, 9, 10, I can't really say a kid's going to become a professional. You might say, listen, I spot some talent here, but there's no way for sure anybody can say in 10 years' time, he's going to be the best at what he does or professional. So it's sort of a gambling, you know, in a sense. Where do people go? What is the first steps? And you've given us the four great tools that we can, which we will highlight as a summary in the podcast as well. But where do I go from here? If I don't have access to somebody like you, what are the self the steps that I can take here as a parent today and say, one, I'm maybe mentally not ready to help my kids. Mm. I don't have the financial means, and I never was a sport person. I never could become a sport person, so I can't even relate. I can't even tell him a story about how it feels to be professional.
Mm.
But I see something in my kid, or I see nothing in my kid, but I just want to make him more stable and ready for life. What would you do from here?
Marietta, sorry to interrupt. Just to follow that question, which might link to it, can you claim back from medical aid to see a psychologist?
Yes.
So that was related to that.
Is that one thing? Okay. Yes. Okay. I didn't even know that.
No, yes. You can always, a person can always talk to the school teacher. Because even in the smallest rural area, there's a teacher, and that teacher is qualified. And that teacher, to become qualified, that teacher had to take psychology as a subject. So that teacher knows about basic things.
Yeah.
Okay, that is not a specialized sports psychologist, but it's somebody who knows about thoughts and emotions and how to handle things and persevere, etc. So yes, and I mean, even if the teacher says, you know what, and I think teachers should do that, and coaches, but the teacher is the beginning, is to say, I'll find out. Yeah. Because there are many books. There are podcasts like this.
There's YouTube.
There's Google.
Yeah.
You can Google, but sometimes, and I say it to my clients, and I think I'm privileged to have clients who can, yes, they either have a medical aid that pays out for psychological services, or the parents can afford it. And even if parents pay off an account, they still able to work with me. But I say, forget about Google or reading all the books, because you need to have a psychological background.
And experience.
But a teacher can say, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Just work it. Say to yourself, I can. I will get this right. Go ask for help. People should know that they can ask for help. Nowadays, the training of coaches involve psychology. They have to learn it. So coaches can help. And yes, the psychological services are there for the coach, to help the coach to be able to be a good coach, to help the athlete, to help the parents. When I see young children up to the age of 12, I want the parent in the office with me, because the parent understands, also has to learn how they should approach, how do we need to think and talk. And instead of emphasizing outcome, focus on task.
Yeah.
So there are means for parents.
Yeah.
There is actually no way. People have cell phones. Even in the smallest place, and I've seen even wherever you live, out of estates in a
rural area,
they have a DSTV dish.
And a cell phone.
So go on Google.
Yeah.
Read about that.
Yeah.
And later in life, and through the school, and this is how I think it should be, through schools, get in touch. Because most schools, well, of course, it's more in cities, have a school psychologist, and the school psychologist has the basic. They are not trained specific into something, but they are there for the child. They know what's good. The educational psychologist. Remember to be where I am, my one foot stands in the sports sciences.
Yeah.
And on the other foot, I'm a qualified, registered psychologist.
Yeah.
So it's years and years. But the sports sciences is whatever. So any teacher learns the basics of psychology. But they should also start to take it and apply it to themselves. Start to think, how can I teach these little ones?
Yeah. It's so true what you say there, because I think parents think they can do more than what they think. So even if you prepare mentally, don't think you can take it on, there's still an opportunity for you to actually say, firstly, go break the silence with your kids.
Yes.
To say, listen, let's talk about this right now.
But not just with your kids, with yourself.
With yourself, yeah, and parents, your family.
Sometimes parents find it so difficult to cope with the challenges and demands of daily life.
Yeah, even my dad, when I was playing golf, I wasn't a big reader, and I'm still not. So he... read from Dr. Bob Rotella, Golfers Not a Game of Perfect.
Yes.
So what he did was he read it,
and while he was
reading it, he would highlight the key factors that would be relevant to me.
Yeah.
Mm.
So then when he was done with it, I used to, obviously it was short reading, which was manageable, and I used to go through and read the highlighted pages, and I obviously got an understanding, which my father helped me, knowing that I'm not going to go read 200 pages of a book because that's not me. You get me?
Yeah.
I'm not a reader. I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So
if you want to, there is a way. Okay. Yes. There is a way. I want to just give more clearly answer to the thing of medical aids. Now, I can only speak for here in South Africa. Like, as a psychologist, my practice is registered with every single medical aid that we have. Because we pay the fees to BHF, that, and then, yes, it depends on the medical aid.
Type of medical aid.
If you have a hospital plan, of course it's not going to pay out.
Yeah.
If it's a saver, well, then you need that money maybe for physical emergencies, medical stuff. But most medical aids do pay out for psychological services. And seeing a sports psychologist, that is, you need to be a registered psychologist.
Yeah.
It's also psychological, because what do we work with? We work with how to handle stress, how to handle anxieties, how to handle pressure, how to cope with situations. So it is psychological services.
But speak to people. I mean, look at you here this morning, Mariette, and what a privilege for us to have had you. You just immediately came on to share your knowledge. There's no attachment to this conversation.
And I'm always willing to share my
knowledge. And I think people would be surprised of if your kid, and I'm not saying you open up the floodgates, but if there are kids that are struggling or a parent doesn't know exactly what to do, I say start reaching out.
Yes.
People are actually amazing and how they respond to things and how much they can help. If you look at the Sunshine Tour, you know, with OG Malefe, which we also had on here, and he was telling me that if he says he needs help with the kids, people just open their arms.
Yes.
Okay, OG, we're going to be there. We're going to help you. So you'll be surprised. But for me as a parent and as a mother or a father this morning, start the conversation with your kids. To say that life, it's not just about you physically being strong and fit. It's not just about putting nice clothes on for the day. We need to prepare you for life.
Yes.
And with that, the brain is the biggest part of our human body. It might not be in physicality, but it certainly is the...
It's the computer. It's the computer. Everything.
So
the
spend
mind is
exactly,
there.
And but it's the one thing that we don't talk about. It's the one thing that there isn't programs in school. I mean, never in my school once do I remember somebody coming in and speak to us about the mind. You know, it was toughen up or get off. If you don't perform, I'll replace you. That's the toughness.
That's it.
And I say that it served a purpose to some point, because I say not because today it feels like the opposite is happening. We are too easy on people. We make it, but I suppose I'm not qualified to speak about that. But for me, it's like just start the conversation. Break that rule of I'm the toughness, or in this house we don't speak about this, in this house. And Marietta, what I also found is my dad really, really integrated with me is humbleness. And the most humblest people today, the most successful people in this world, business, sports-wise, are some of the humblest people. They're confident in what they say.
Yes.
They're confident in when they come into a room, but they are humble.
Yes,
you know, they'll be the first ones to make you a cup of coffee, the first ones to open up the door for you, you know, and to me, that's a big message that I always want to say to kids, you know, stop your attitude, stop thinking you're better than everybody else.
So, you know what, Albert, sometimes that, which I call a negative attitude, is there also as a protection, because if you go look behind it, you will see there's a small person. Despite the muscles.
Yeah.
And it's also, that person also sometimes need that help.
Mm.
But that's for another day.
I hear what you're saying there,
I agree with humbleness. one never needs to think I'm better than others. I you know, I am the person. No, no. It is to be thankful for what you have and really to be grateful because it's blessings.
Yeah.
It's absolutely blessings what you can do, even if you can do, even if you can mend shoes. It's a blessing. It's your talent. Do it to the best you can. Whatever you do. If you can mend shoes, do it fantastically.
Yeah.
And be friendly. And you will see you will be overwhelmed with all business, the shoes and business.
I agree with
so
you.
So it's about that, to reach out. To reach out to people. To reach out. And there's always, and this goes for everyone, to say, hey, it's okay. Like I've said, it's okay sometimes not to be okay.
Yeah.
Just get back on track or talk to help you to become more okay also in yourself. So the mental part, and that's actually what it is so part of life. It's part of every person's life.
Yeah.
And I love to work with people. I love to just help people. I think there are many, many, many psychologists that's more brighter than I am.
Yeah.
They have 3-4 PhDs and whatsoever. I have 3 kids and a practice, and I was a lecturer at TUT in Pretoria and Tufts at the time.
You were a runner.
I am a runner, and I spin 5-6 times a week if I can. And I'm a friend. Many roles.
Yeah.
But it's to whatever you do in life, love it. Commit to it. Go fully flat out.
Yeah.
And always think, hey, there's someone else who needs a pat on the back.
You play such a vital role, and let me tell you what, 60 seconds ago, my mindset also quickly took a change when you said that people, even with bad attitudes, they need help because it creates impact around them. Mm. They become better people, and those lessons that they learn, they pass on for the rest of their life.
Mm.
So thank you for the impact you've had in sports in South Africa and all the people that we enjoy. And if you think about it, Marietta, when the Springboks win on a Saturday, the psychologists and all the people that are involved to get them to that point and to always get them ready, it has such a positive impact on us as South Africans and on the nation.
The whole nation.
If you look at sports since 1994, and I would say it played a role even before that, whether it was more contentious or not, sports plays a massive role in South Africa.
It does.
And a very unique role to the rest of the world. And it does. Think you're right when you say New Zealand and their rugby, it's very close to how we feel about it.
And India with the cricket.
India with the Pakistan. Cricket. 100%. Mm. And I will tell you that I think in South Africa, we do mental is so much more important for us here. And I'm not saying in comparison to the rest of the world, but in New Zealand, you don't have concerns with infrastructure, government, future, health,
petrol price, power.
That's not what also has to
they
suck
don't
you
know
up.
Load
you know, the player's there, and that's why I always say it's so amazing. When New Zealand's the media or in Australia, when they attack our Springbok players over weekend, I always say, have you not learned this lesson? Do not come with us with a mental game, because we will beat you at that every single time.
Of course, you can just look at the Springboks, and it's a lot to their mental strength.
Massive.
They standing there, and I like that Zulu Impi, standing and watching that haka.
Correct.
And I actually love the ritual of the haka. In my family, I think I'm the only one who say, hey, the haka, because I think about the psychology behind
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
mental preparation.
It is, absolutely. And I actually, I have an admiration for the All Blacks. And I always say, Richie McCaw was a person that, people who worked with him and who played with him could learn a lot because of his mental sight.
Mm-hmm.
But I am fully behind the Springboks, and I'm a blue bull.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm less blue than other times, but I'm a blue bull.
Okay, Maria, you can leave now. Huh?
No. You see, blue, green, and gold, that goes together. But it is about mental health. In general, it's about, and I say thank you to you and thank you to Arthur. And I think the fact is that Arthur and me known each other for quite a while. You were very young, actually. It's when
probably
you
12 years.
Yeah. It was you first started to play professional golf. He didn't have the... It was no beard and no moustache at that stage. Yes.
People keep saying that, Arthur.
Listen, when
you're putting on this innocent look...
When I shave everything and I'm clean, I look about 5-6 years younger.
Listen, buddy, it's going to serve you very well in your older days.
Yeah,
it will. But thank you for the opportunity, and I see it as a privilege. Mm. And maybe somewhere, somebody might learn something by listening to us, and even if it's just the fact that, hey, speak up. Think about, hey, have a problem, because no problem is a problem. It's never a barrier. It's a OFI, an opportunity for improvement.
Yeah, well, thanks, Marietta, for having us. I think you've got a very busy schedule, so thanks for opening your morning, and it was very good to see you. And yeah, just from my side, I think even if just there's one listener that's taken something out of it, then I'm very content and happy, and we've actually helped someone, and, you know, someone can improve and do better. So I think that's very, very cool.
Bless you guys. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks, Maria.
And thank you for everybody always listening. We appreciate it so immensely.
On the next episode of The Human Golf Show.
It's probably one of our best kept secrets is the Zexia brand. It really is. It's remarkable, actually. So basically with Zexio, it's clubs that we've designed purely for a moderate swing speed player to improve their results for a moderate swing speed player. So we have Strixen, which is a tour-driven brand. We have Cleveland, which is your everyday country club golf member brand. Then we have Zexio, which is specifically designed to improve that slow swinger.